Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3, and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches.
As well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode. For this week's episode, we spoke to 1316 5,000 meter runner Johnny Davies. Fresh off his new PB that sent him to the top of the UK rankings, we spoke to Johnny about his exceptional junior career, navigating injuries over the past 2 years, and much more. Enjoy. Okay, first off, Johnny, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. Let's start with 2 weeks ago, 13:16, a 4-second PB, but Matt's got down in the notes here. It must have felt like a 40-second PB in a way, considering how the last few years have been. So just talk us through it, mate, because that's what everyone wants to know about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks for having me, first of all. But yeah, mate, it was good. I mean, there's not too much else to say. I think, as a general, nothing I've done this year has been too exceptional, but I've built really nicely. I knew coming into that race I was in good shape, and because I was in a fast race, you just think, get on the train and see what happens. As the race played out, it was pretty much perfect, because I think they were going to go through in about 7:53-ish was the original pace, which is pretty sharp. I went through in about 8:02. I was on the back end of the train, so for me it was like absolutely perfect. And then if you feel good in a 5K, you get to 3K, and then you can hit the last 2K and kind of pick up time quite quickly. So it was one of those days which everything kind of went right. The camp had gone well. The race went well. The weather was good. It was just like one of those good days.
Mate, let's talk about that camp a little bit, because we did. You ran a 13:42 at the start, like before you'd even gone to altitude. So just, describe what that training looked like over that 4 weeks, because to then run 13:16 4 weeks later, and look, there's good altitude camps, and then there's that.
I think there's a few things probably to digest in that. I think first of all, altitude has always worked really well for me. Like I get, when I've done my bloods, which has been a few years since I've actually like checked them, I get a huge response, which is the first thing. And I've ran quite a few PBs immediately down from altitude. So I think first and foremost is that. I think secondly, I probably, that race, I'm not sure in hindsight I would go and race on the front end of a camp like that again off jet lag. I think it was good to get a race in the legs, and I think it actually helped me in that sense. But to be honest, it was me and Henry McClucky were in that race, and we were just like walking up to this race at 10 o'clock really jet lag, thinking, yeah, might have bitten off a little bit more than we can chew it. But yeah, it's served me well. In terms of the camp, to be fair, because it was sandwiched between two races, obviously I raced on the other side, and I was only there for 3 weeks. And then obviously with the way altitude is anyway, you don't want to overdo it the first week. It was very unexceptional what I did. Just 80 mile weeks, generally 3 sessions a week. But to be honest, two out of three of those were just, one was a tempo, one was just a very cruisy session. And then one session a week, I kind of pushed it. I think we did a one session up there about a week before the race where all three of us, me, Henry and Jack, did a K time trial. Well, time trial-ish, like 2.5 minutes, 500 meters, and then 502. And that was sort of like the one big push up there. And to be fair, all three of us flew like a 223, 224K, which is pretty tasty on the front end, and then a decent 500. So at that point, like I knew I was in good nick, but generally nothing exceptional up there. But I think it was more of a culmination of, I kind of knew the plan all year and I kind of felt like I was building quite steadily. And even before altitude, I knew I was in shape. So actually probably that 1341 was an underperformance rather than the 1316. Maybe somewhere in the middle, but like, do you know what I mean? The 1341 or 1342, whatever it was, wasn't probably reflective of exactly where my shape was.
Obviously, like kind of mentioned right at the start, that in terms of recent years, it probably seemed like a massive chunk. But in terms of your mindset going into a race like that, knowing that kind of, when was it, 2016, you ran in the 1320s already. Going into this race, like, has your mindset always been, you know, you can get back there if you just kind of hit a good one?
I think I've always known I'm good enough, but the sport, there's a lot of variables and, you know, I think we'll get into it, but I've had a fair few injuries over the last few years, which to be fair, that's really why I've not been at the level I want to be. And it takes consistency to run quickly. I think that's the key. And I think if I get my body onto a start line with a good winter behind me, or even just a solid winter behind me, and I know I can run quick, and then you start building confidence. And I think just before I went up to the camp, I went in the lab and we did a submax, and it's like that data was as good as it's ever been. And to be fair, even though at that point I didn't have potentially the speed or the 5K specific stuff, it's quite easy to translate that then into, that stuff comes quite easy to me, VO2 max stuff. To be fair, like I can always find that. Like that's kind of like the easy bit of my physiology. So for me, it's building that base is the key thing. And then, yeah, I build confidence. My races this year just sort of build gradually. So when it came to the start line, I knew I was going to run well. There's obviously, you get a few doubts, but I was pretty confident that I could just get on the train and I was going to run, bare minimum sub 1330. I just felt good on the day. So yeah, went a bit quicker than that.
That's a nice feeling that. I mean, yeah, we talk about your winter and look, some of these results, where were we? 17th at National Cross, 28.40 in Valencia and 13.49 for ninth place in Armagh. Like, good results, but not those of a 13.16 man. So in this period, were you just being very consistent?
Yeah, so I think if I go back through the whole winter, I started and had a build towards a half marathon in Lisbon, and like kind of started that quite early September after obviously a really bad track season last year where I just wasn't fit. I then picked up this basically stomach muscular issue, which basically hampered my progress there. But actually, before that race in October in Lisbon, I'd got a really good consistent base. And then from there, we literally were just like, look, it doesn't matter until the summer. We're just going to try and be as consistent as we can with the training and have a really methodical approach to building. I think the 28.40 I ran in Valencia was a good confidence boost. And then I was in a weird place because I was fit for a lot of the winter, but I just wasn't specifically fit for anything, which was kind of like a frustrating place to be. But I was, I think, in the grand picture, I think sometimes I try to run an indoor season and I think you can just get really sidetracked and you can get into the real specifics of running quick and, you know, doing lots of track reps, and you feel really good in the moment, but then you kind of lose some of the base. So I think we were really just thinking long term, like, let's make sure I'm ready to go in the summer and try and run quick then. I think as I got older, like, I can be just way more patient with it. I mean, I just wanted to put solid performances down those races. So yeah, 17th National Cross was not brilliant at all, but it wasn't a disaster. It was just like a good, I hadn't really done any like work on the grass, like we'd been doing sort of like longer tempo. So it was just building incrementally. And as you say, yeah, it has obviously just clicked into place over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, which is kind of what I think you want to do. And
yeah,
I think especially when you're younger, you just try and basically run quick at everything, right? You're like, I'm gonna smash the road relays, whatever your season, then you're gonna smash like cross country, and then I'm gonna smash indoor season, and eventually it takes its toll, at least on me. And I don't know if it's like it's both mentally and physically. I don't think you can hold that level of performance all year round. So I think it's just trying to be a bit smarter with it and think, right, I want to run quick in the summer this year. So we're going to aim to go in the summer. And actually everything before that is just, it's just training really. It might be in races, but they're building towards something bigger.
It's tough for elites, man. Like that, you know, you have to go through those, I guess, subpar results during the winter. And you mentioned kind of when you're young, you smash everything. But I also think when, you know, the sub elites, if you like, they seem to kind of just be on form all the time, but they never get that really high end performance like you can get out of yourself, like elites can manage to get out of themselves.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. I think one thing about this winter as well is while they might have been subpar performances in terms of what I've done historically, if you look at how terrible my last track season was and just how unfit I was, there was at least progression from that. But yeah, no, it's a fair point actually. You're saying you get these guys who are in just always solid shape. And I think on one hand, that's just not me. Like it never will be. I both come in and out of shape quite quickly. And I think, yeah, maybe when you do start going to like really high-end performances, there is probably a bigger physical toll on the body. So maybe you just can't hold that for as long time.
You mentioned building up really methodically, but obviously now you've run that 13:16 already. We're kind of mid-May. What's the plan now? What does the rest of the season and kind of the next few weeks and months look like?
Yeah, I think I'm in a nice spot now because I have a good time behind me. So yeah, I'm racing. Well, I'm pacing Highgate this weekend, which is fun. So pretty quick at the front end. So that would be a good test in itself. So yeah, looking forward to that. And then in terms of racing for me, I'm racing Huelva, which is on the 6th of June. So I think that will be a fun race for me because quite often like the East Africans turn up there, a few of them. I think last year it was running 13:03, so I think it's a real free hit for me. I'm just going to try and go out at 13:07 pace, try and run that world time, give it a crack. It you know what, it might be too fast, I don't know, it's obviously going to be right on the end, but you've got to give that a good go. And then we'll see about the European team jumps, which will be a couple of weekends after that. Which if I got selected, I would probably go for that. But if not, then it's just purely looking at the British champs from there. And then I think a little bit longer term, I think we're looking at 13:05 and that the window for that for the Olympics, that opens up in July, in terms of that 1 year out. So, you know, if you could get an Olympic time a year early, that would obviously be great. So, yeah, that was a little bit further away. But to be honest, at the moment, it's literally try and run one more really quick 5K and then British champs. And then potentially before British champs go up to altitude just for a couple of weeks, just to like kind of like top up that system as I know it works well for me. Little bit depending on PhD stuff as well. That.
Definitely, we'll get more into the PhD in a bit, I'm sure. But have you had any thoughts on improving that world ranking? I think at the moment when I checked, you're 244th, and I know these world rankings are done on points, not times. But obviously when you're going to be close to that qualifying mark, we know where British Athletics stand, but I still think they, you know, they may just be nice and let a few people in on that world ranking. So, and I think someone like Jack Rose, what, 70th, 50th, if you limit three per country. So, you know, you could easily break into that top kind of 45, I'm sure.
It's fair. Like we had this conversation, me, Luke, a couple of, we sat down like post race last week. And I like, to be honest, it'll take care of itself because by the time it's three performances, right? So you race over and British champs, that's three performances.
True.
I mean, it's a weird system anyway. But I to be honest, I was like, Luke, do I need to get this ranking up? As exactly as you said, because British Athletics might find some sense and maybe take people that aren't sick from the all time to actually get into the games, whatever it is. I think ranking it will be important for that. But as I say, by the time I've done 12, which is the bronze meet, British champs will be worth a decent number of points.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've got three races then. And then I think if I'm being even more honest, I'd love to make the world champs this year. But from where I was last year, we were thinking, but my basic plan this year was to run, get back into PB territory so I could have a decent chance of making the Olympics next year. Mm. So in a way, I'm already ahead of that curve. And obviously you always want more, but it's, you know, don't be too greedy and try and race 10 times in the next month and blow up your season sort of thing.
Do you know what's great to hear is that, you know, you're talking about making Olympics and the world champs, and these standards kind of haven't put you off. A lot of people, I think outside the sport, just assume elites like yourself have been put off. But, you know, speaking to you, and obviously, you know, I know Jack Rowe is still very much gunning and hunting that standard. You guys haven't been put off at all by these standards getting quicker.
I think you only have these opportunities at this age, and the number of Olympic Games particularly you can make in a career is very few. And what, I'm 28, like maybe I'll be what, 29, so maybe there's another Olympics after this, but like it's your one chance now, really, isn't it? It's the way I look at it. So I think I owe it to myself to give it everything. And if I fall short, you know, then so be it. I mean, the conversation might get more frustrating if you get an invite and that's rejected for different reasons. But my first and foremost sort of thing is don't let them have to give you, make a decision, make the decision for them. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, then you don't have to worry about any of this ranking and political stuff. It's just you're on the plane. So that's what you got to go for. I don't think there's a point of not aiming for that, to be fair. Like, I think you might not make it, you might, but I think you've got to give it a go. I think I'd always have a regret there, especially yourself. And to be, obviously me and Jack were out there and we were having the conversation, and it does just make it a bit strange though, because we were basically both saying to each other, we're no longer massively competing against each other because these times are so obviously we are.
So true.
We both need, like, if we both run the time, we'll both go. And if we both don't run the time, we won't go. So the weird thing is, we're not really rivals in the sense that, being brutally honest, will more than three people run 13.05 or 13.07? Probably not. I mean, it doesn't tend to happen. I know standards are improving. So it's a weird situation now where me and Jack were like, look, let's just work together. And actually, we were talking out there and thinking we probably should do the top guys when we at certain times need to train together a little bit more potentially through the winter, and just because we need to get the edge to get the time. So we're almost at the moment working together rather than against each other, which is strange because you're rival at the same end, but that's where it is at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Could we see that translate into some races? I know probably not in the next couple of months, but maybe in years to come, with these standards getting so much better, will we see you guys as the top Brits turning up to the same domestic races so that you guys don't have to travel abroad and it makes it a lot more accessible for kind of fast times in the UK?
You know what? I'd love, funny enough, we had this conversation as well. The difficulty with, if you want to run quick, you don't have a huge number of opportunities a year. Mm-hmm. You're talking 4-5 quick five, and that's at a push, to be fair. Mm-hmm. Like, you can actually run really fast. And if you put it all on a UK race, it's like, just being honest, you can't guarantee the weather. We all know what it's like.
So true. Yeah.
Which makes it difficult. I would love to go. I mean, they say it'd be great if we didn't have to travel all over the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you turn up to a night in California or Belgium, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be perfect. Whereas I just think in the UK, this is not always the case. You know, if it's 50-50, you can just get a windy, rainy day. And it's like, well, I was trying to run 13.04 today. That's literally not going to happen. I think we can definitely do more. And there will be definitely times which I think we can all turn up. And I think we should turn up to more races and communicate better. And there should be certain races which that does happen. I know, obviously, Watford, and the Grand Prix, that one has sort of come a little bit like that recently. Mm. And I guess Highgate's doing that for the 10K. So I think you can run quick in this country. It's just difficult to guarantee it.
Yeah, agree, man. Look, something a lot of people don't know about you, obviously you ran 13.23 in 2016, which was an Olympic standard at the time. Was it 13.25? Obviously, Butchard, Farah and Tom Farrell went that year. You also ran your 1500 PB, your 800 PB in what, 2017, 339 and 148. So did these times haunt you? Because I think, you know, you're one of the few who's you've always been sticking around, and a lot of people may have forgot that Johnny Davies, if you like. So did these times haunt you for a little while, especially that 1323? You were aged 21 at that point, which is just insane.
I guess there's definitely an element of that. To be honest, I think it's more been a case of injuries and also just not enjoying the sport,
right,
which is why. So I don't know whether, and maybe there is an element of the fact you've run quick and you had success early and then you're not getting success, and it's a bit of a grind, and there's definitely potentially an element of that. But yeah, I think most of it, I just there's just times which I was just coming out of injury, I just couldn't get any rhythm, and I was finding it like really hard. And I think over, even though last year was terrible, like the track season, I actually started enjoying the running again. And maybe that is what you're saying. It's hard to delve sometimes really deep into your own psychology, what's going on, right? Like, you're just running. But like, I think maybe last year, because I was running so badly, it almost just took the shackles off. Like, I was just like, well, okay, I can't break 14 now. I'm like, this is, I'm nowhere near this level. So let's just go back to absolute basics and actually just enjoy racing, enjoy running. And I didn't always do that, but like, I was adamant that I was going to do more of that. And actually that's what happened this winter. So, but yeah, no, it is interesting looking back. Obviously I did have that good junior career. And the other interesting thing is actually a lot of people miss this. I actually ran 13:21 in
2021,
two years ago, but it was one of those years I was just incredibly inconsistent.
Yeah.
And it kind of went under the radar, and probably deservedly. I don't think I was actually running in that kind of shape generally. I think you're right. I think it has been tough at times. And I've actually worked a lot over the last 2 years with a sports psychologist and that's been really good. Steve Peters, he's I don't know if you know him, but he's basically the guy that wrote The Chimp Paradox and worked with British Cycling and all those sort of quite top guys. And that's been really helpful for me, and kind of just seen things in a slightly different light. And it has made me enjoy the sport more.
It's interesting. Obviously, during that time as well, we know you're obviously with Luke Gunn now. You were with Ron McKinn, your coach from Reading. Talk us through that, because you had some incredible performances as a junior, not just those kind of coming out of the junior ranks as well. So talk us through kind of that relationship when you first started out in the sport.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rob's an absolute legend. Great, great bloke. Still in contact with him now, still talk to him. I mean, the only reason that relationship really ended was because I was just based up in Birmingham. It was just a distance thing. We just couldn't communicate. And especially at that time, I mean, I was probably at fault. Well, probably now I could ring him up and be a lot more. But you know what it's like when you're young, you're not necessarily on the end of your phone all the time. You barely speak to your mum and dad, never mind your coach. Great. And to be honest, Rob was great because he set me up really well in the early part of my career. I wasn't a huge mileage or anything like that, but the training I did do, I think, was very effective. I remember coming to university and there was this like new thing for loads of people called like tempo and threshold, which I'd been doing for like 3-4 years. And like in quite a sophisticated way as well. It wasn't just, do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just go out there and run 30 minutes hard or whatever. It was very much, you know, we were using lactate, we're using heart rate, we were doing block tempos and all the things now, which are like very trendy now. I was doing a little bit of time ago. So I think he set me up really well. It was always interesting with Rob's training. It was, It wasn't like the glamorous stuff. We didn't do huge numbers of really quick track reps and stuff like that. And I remember used to hearing what other people would do at training, but like, I can't do that. And then I go and beat them in races. So it was just very effective what he did do. And as I say, he's a great guy, still in contact with him now. Still get a bit of advice when I go down to Reading and see him every now and then. So absolute legend, Rob.
Yeah, you were almost very, very ahead of the game at that point, weren't you? And I do remember, you know, kind of being involved in the numbers side, you know, the heart rates, the lactates, like you said, from a young age. And you've kind of stuck with that now. haven't you? And you're still using those numbers now. Do they affect you anyway? You talk about the psychology. I'm always interested to see if they can get in your head a little bit.
I don't think they do, not anymore at all. I think I've definitely got a little bit of a geeky side to me. I'm doing a PhD, so definitely got a geeky side. But I love it. I literally think it's great just training on. And also it's you know, sometimes it's nice because you don't have to train really hard. Like you train really, like sometimes the best thing to do isn't killing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people still, you see people and they're like absolutely slogging themselves doing a tempo gym, and you're thinking, but you're not getting the benefit here. Like literally all the data is saying this. You're just making your life harder. Yeah, of course. So if you go and do a lab test and you get told you're really unfit, it's a bit, you're like, well, that's rubbish, isn't it? I'd rather be fit than unfit. But I think there's a good way of using the data, because it's obviously not everything. If the data says one thing and you still go and run 13, 10 or whatever, I mean, who cares what the data says? So it's using it in a smart way, but yeah, not being too hung up on it if it isn't going right, I think is basically what it is.
Yeah, good point. And it just quickly, like, you when you went to Bowen University, you were still coaching Rob for a couple years. You mentioned kind of, you know, lack of communication stuff broke it down a little bit, but it did work for a couple of years. I mean, you still won, you're at university when you won your under 23 European under 23 cross and stuff like that, and that's when you ran your 13-23. So how did you know? What advice would you give to people who still want to hold on to that coach back home, going to uni now?
Oh, it's 100% doable. I think, like a lot of things in life, communication is so key, because if you can communicate what's going on, you'll solve 99% of the issues which arise. I guess the other thing I would say, which again you're going to have to communicate, which how you do this, but you don't want to detach yourself from doing what the university group is doing. I don't think there's point going to a really good running university or in Birmingham or wherever it is, Loughborough, whatever you go, and then just training on your own, because what's the point? So, you know, there's got to be a little bit, you want your coach to buy in to what the university's doing, and then when you need to, step away. I've always said as well, the winter's always interesting, because I do find it quite funny when most people are doing pretty similar things in the winter. If you're, especially when you're younger, if you're doing a cross country, you've sort of that endurance background, you're doing a cross country winter, and it's like pretty much all of it's the same. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? You're doing aerobic intervals of some description. You're doing a threshold of some description. You're doing a long run. When you probably want to have a relationship where your coach won't make you do a session where you're doing 3-minute reps rather than 3-minute 30 reps or something, and then having to do the whole thing on your own. I think that's where you need to find that balance. But it's perfectly doable. Like loads of people do it and had really successful sort of like entire university careers plus beyond that. So communication, my one bit of really big advice.
And then let's chat about kind of that transition into being coached by Luke Garner, because obviously he's still doing that now, and just talk about your overall setup at Birmingham, because you've been there a number of years now.
Yeah, like I'm never gonna leave.
Never left.
Yeah. So yeah, I think with Luke Garner, it's pretty easy. I think the coach athlete relationship certainly changes as you get older. Do you know what I mean? Like most people can put, if you're 28 and you can't basically put your training week together, do you know what I mean? Something's amiss, because you should be able to do that. So it's far more of like a partnership. So Luke still sets my training each day, but do you know what I mean? There's a little bit of flexibility in that. I don't need to. Some of the time I won't be speaking to him for a week because I don't need to. And then sometimes I'll speak to him every single day because I do need to. It's that kind of relationship these days. The setup's great. Obviously we have a bunch of older guys based around who are doing various different things. Marky P, Mike Ward, people like that, who are probably the guys I do most of my running, most of my training with. And then obviously we've still got the big university group who can jump in, and you can go and, you know, get put away in a session every single week if you want to by Barnaco or someone like that, who's just a lot of very talented guys in that training group. And I think that's the one funny thing as you get older, I've found, is I remember watching senior athletes train with the group and thinking, oh, they're not doing very well, but they'd go and race really well. Maybe even something like a Luke Gunn when I first turned up. It was like every week, but he's going and run like close to Olympic, like 28. He's British champion for the steeplechase. And you realise, oh, yeah, these when you get older, like, oh, these older guys are actually doing a lot more like training than you are. And they're working a lot harder and they're turning up to sessions just absolutely like mullered and just like trying to get around. So, but yeah, the setup's good. And I'm very lucky. Obviously, we've got the Birmingham hub here. I'm still on a sports scholarship as I'm the eternal student, boy who never grew up, apparently. but that support is great, you know, because I've been there so long. I have, I think, a really good relationship with all of the practitioners here. You know, I mean, I walk around, chat to people, and I feel very at home here, which is great. Like it is my home at the moment, and yeah, it's a good setup.
What does that support look like? Obviously, you mentioned you're working with a psychologist. Yeah, talk about the support, you know, as a complete whole.
Yeah, so in terms of what I use, like predominantly, I mean, there's a lot of different services you can tap into, but in terms of the regular sort of things I'd use, like the S&C support, you know, twice a week, just program, is just taken care of. Physiology, work very closely with the physiologist, who I say from the science side. And to be fair, Dave Sheldon, he helps too. Often in my meetings, we'll have us three, me, Luke, and Dave will sit down and we'll go through the training, and he'll put his kind of perspective from a sports science side, which I think is very helpful and a good thing to do. Physio support, I break quite a lot. I have a very good relationship with the guy here, and basically that's all. I don't pay for any of this stuff, which is obviously great. So they're probably the main three services that I use. There's other things which I can tap into if I wanted. There's nutrition, which I do a little bit. I get my skin folds done just to basically keep on top of it either direction. You just want to, you know, I think it's good to carry a little bit of weight in the winter and kind of lean down a little bit so you're not kind of right on the edge all year. So kind of been monitoring that through the year. The sports psych side actually was... that's done externally to the university. So a friend knew Steve Peters and kind of got into contact that way. But they're kind of the main. And then obviously you've got the sessions put on and everything around here, which you know, I think Birmingham's been very good at big sessions in one group. And that's not to throw shade at any other universities, but it's always been one, even though people are doing different events, it's very much one group, which I think is massive. And I think there's a very like supportive atmosphere. Which is kind of developed from that.
Yeah, talk us through what kind of your training week looks like. So I think you mentioned in terms of on camp, you were three sessions a week, and we know often, especially in the past few years, it's kind of trendy to move towards that American Tuesday, Friday, two sessions a week style of training. But talk us through your kind of what your training week looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not absolutely rigid to anything. So we kind of like play each like coming up period as it comes, but yeah, I typically will train I'll have a fresh, if I run about 80 miles a week, I'll do a threshold, and then often just, yeah, often to be fair, it is more that American style, but not always. So often do a threshold, a session either on the Friday or Saturday, and then depending on whether I've done the session on the Friday or Saturday, I'll do a easier or harder long run on the Sunday. So if I do a session on the Friday, take the rest day on a Saturday, and then that means that you can go and basically work a little bit more in the long run. And yeah, we basically were, for the sessions, we were doing slightly more this year, but we were keeping it to just basically those two predominantly. So, but we were doing sort of 10 miles worth of threshold work, typically on the Tuesday, slightly broken up, but it's obviously a decent volume at that. And again, the Friday session tended to be, through the winter especially, is almost 10k kind of work on the track. Occasionally I jump in on the Saturday doing like a grass session with the university group or something like that, but on the whole we were doing these sort of longer fartlecky, just sort of like quite big volume stocky sessions. But I think actually it's almost like another way of working that same system, and that's kind of when I sat down last year, that was what I was missing. I was actually, my, even as bad as I was running last year, when we, again, looking at the data, like my VVO2 and that kind of side of things was actually really good. I just had absolutely no base to run quick off. So we were just like, we just need to work very hard on that. So we've almost attacked that from different angles, and that has worked. But I think probably that's why when I said I wasn't specifically in shape for everything, if you're basically working sort of either side of tempo really is what you're doing, you're not actually really in shape for anything. Maybe you probably are in shape for a half marathon, say, or a 10K, but I wasn't doing a lot of them. So, but yeah, that's kind of how a training week roughly works. My SNC days are on easy days, which isn't the fashionable thing to do, but it works for me and I'm in kind of good routine with that. My SNC is pretty functional. I don't go heavy at all. I've gone through periods where I've tried to lift heavy and I think it just carries a lot of fatigue, and for our event demand, I don't think you need it. But at the same time, I think doing those movement patterns, do you know what I mean? Like being good in the squat position, like being able to RDL well, having like a good core, I think that stuff's really important. I think, you know, like some people, like maybe if you're a 1500 runner, it's really important to squat 2 times your body weight or 1.5 or whatever number like people have picked or picked, but for me it's just about being strong and robust.
Yeah, kind of agree with that. Richard Blagrove, we had on a few weeks ago as well, would agree with that. Yeah, look, interesting you said about that 10 mile worth threshold, because 80 mile a week to be doing 10 mile kind of tempo sessions is quite big, you know. A lot of people would still be on their sort of 6 mile worth of tempo if they're kind of on that kind of mileage.
Yeah, it is. I think, like, to be fair, it's one of those things. Like, I've given you the headline figure there. I've given you the biggest tempo I pretty much did.
This is it.
You know what I mean, so
this is the secret. No, I was just going to say, was that an adjustment you made this year? You know, talking about your performances last year, to just go, look, I need to be getting about 10 miles worth of, you know, that tempo in, or have you always tried to do that?
No, you know what? It's funny. Me and Luke have sat down and said, wow, we need to get 10 miles worth of tempo in this winter. Like literally probably for the last 3 or 4 years, it doesn't happen because I break down or something happens.
Yeah,
and you don't get there or you get sidetracked. You go to indoor season and you lose sight of the goal a little bit. And I think this time we're like, no, we're doing it. Like, so actually it was quite funny because every week it was just 1 mile extra of tempo for like 5-6 weeks, which it was, but is what I needed. And the funny thing is, you have to almost eat humble pie when you start doing quite a big, at least I do. Like I go in the lab and you can never take it. And you're like, oh, I can tempo from 4:41 to 4:57. And you're there tempoing at like 5:15, is like absolutely blowing. And you're like, wait, this isn't right. And then you get someone on the lap tick and they're like, yeah, that's perfect. You're in the right zone. You're like, well, it was rubbish, isn't it? Like, I should be better than this. But like, you just, if you're working that zone and you're getting a lot of time at that zone, then it's perfect. And I guess, to be fair, it's similar. Obviously, very trendy these days is double threshold days and Sprite and Ingebrigtsen's. And I don't think you necessarily need to do that. I think that obviously works. It clearly works very well. But I do think you need to spend a decent amount of time at that zone if you want to be a, you know, competitive at that 5K distance. So yeah, that's kind of the story of the tempo of the year.
And so how often are you actually getting people on the track and in the field taking the lactics as well as doing those lab tests?
Not super often. I think it was at certain times of the year. So in that sort of February through to just before going away in the camp, yeah, to be fair, there was a time it was pretty much every week. Before then, it wasn't. I think we were just trying to be really targeted at that point with that tempo session and make sure it was in exactly the right zone and not going too hard, I think, was probably the main thing. In terms of lab tests, we've done, three through this year. So one right at the start, one kind of in the build up to that, like I'll just post that half marathon, maybe after Valencia, the 10K or around that time. And then I'll be doing one next week. So I think like one thing I really wanted to do this year and I've done really well is I wanted to have all the data points. And again, this was in view of the Olympics next year. I wanted to have all the data points so I could like know what correlates to what. And that includes like skin folds, your physiology, all of that stuff. So then next year, like we'll know about racing a little bit more where I'm at and where I need to be. And just being like really methodical. And to be fair, I have a little bit of that data already. Mm. But yeah, we had this debate about whether it was worth doing a sub max now. We're like, to be honest, yeah, because I'm in 13-16 shape now. Yeah. That would be very useful to know that next year, if I'm back in that shape and what it actually takes to run 13-16.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's probably something people don't do enough is actually track their training. We all have Strava, we all have Garmin, but how often do we look back and how often do we have those key kind of markers that you're keeping track of?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and just quickly, mate, I just want to, you know, just break down some of your injuries, some of your worst ones, some of the ones which took you longest to get back from, and maybe why you kind of felt like you were quite injury prone through their last, you know, 5 years, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me because I'm touching wood now. I have very strong bones, never had a stress fracture, never had a stress response, which like for a 28-year-old, you know, middle long athlete, it's pretty unusual.
Yeah.
But my curse is like tendons, ligaments, muscles are just, I'm naturally very tight. Like, and I think it doesn't take too much to almost take that to any level. So to be honest, the worst injury I had, I was my foot from 2 years ago. So after 2021, obviously around 13-21, mixed year, but was clearly in some sort of decent shape. Mm. And thought, you know, I had a very good chance of making that Commonwealth team, I think, if everything had gone okay. So then I played football golf with some friends. But I mean, it was one of those that you've like, that's really stupid. But then again, it was only football golf. Yeah. Literally like kicked a ball. And I was like, oh, my foot's a bit sore. Just kicked a ball. Like, no more than that. And I love football. So I love football. And I was kicked the ball. And I was like, oh, that was a bit sore. And I was there with my mates. Like, oh, lads, this is hurting a bit. But and like, I get on with it. Come on. Like, end of the season. Like, you can like play one round of football golf. Anyway, by the end of it, I was having to toe poke the ball, which probably was a sign that I probably should stop. And then basically I finished and it was really sore and I was like, oh, don't worry about it, it'll settle down in a day or two. Mm. And I was on my off season, so I didn't even really matter. I was like, it's a bit sore, but it don't really matter. And like 3 or 4 weeks later, obviously you're getting back to proper training, like, this is still hurting, I can't run.
Yeah.
And then nothing I did settled it down. Like, I had in the end had injections, I had all sorts of stuff. And it just went on for, 12 months later, I could still feel it. I got periods that I was able to train through it and then it would just flare up horrifically. In the end, I think just time.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a few things that caused. I think basically there was, we don't exactly know what the exact cause was, but I think basically there's obviously a lot of inflammation in that, the bottom of the post tib and basically that area. So it was on the inside of the foot. But yeah, I mean, it's just frustrating injuries. And I think probably that's, again, probably shouldn't say this, but like in a way, at least a stress fracture, stress response, you know what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, someone says, oh, you got a stress response and it's going to be 8 weeks. Okay, well, it's rubbish, but you know, you can cross train for 8 weeks. I just got to a point where I was just like, am I ever going to be able to run again? And like, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. It was like, it just keeps hurting. And like, I can't put together more than 20 miles in a week because I can't run for more than, and yeah, it was just very frustrating. I think I've had a couple of injuries like that. I had a back injury which presented in a little bit of a similar way. Like it just sort of stayed around and it was niggly and you trained a bit and then it'd go again. And it's those kind of things. I think actually now I've learnt my body, I learnt a lot about what I need to do to keep everything moving and not injured, and you know, little bits of yoga. But also the one thing which I've done a lot this year is breathing exercises. When I had this pain in my ribs this year, we were trying to find solutions to it, and I basically saw a breathing specialist, and that seems to have massively helped. And actually I've done a whole load of things with that. So I do breathing exercises before, I mean, I do Wim Hof. I don't know if you know Wim Hof. Absolutely.
You in the what? The ice tub man.
I don't do the ice tub stuff, but he has like this breathing exercise stuff that he does.
Right.
And I do it before every single run now. I look like an idiot because like you basically hyperventilate, but it's one of those. It really works for me. Yeah. It seems to like open up my body. It seems to oxygenate. It seems to get moving. And I combine that with a whole load of stretches and stuff that over the years I've built up. So I have my own program that, to be honest now, mate, it takes me 30, 40 minutes to go out for an easy run. But you're like, I'm a proper old man. But
that's elite though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the thing is, it's sad. If I just try and go out the door, my body will start really aching. In various different places. So and I think it is because I am so naturally tight in a lot of areas, like I need to do it. But yeah, you work out what works for you, right? And
yeah,
it's effective for me and it seems to be working, and don't break what's working, right?
100%. I mean, I do think that is an element of like, you know, where elites are, you're looking for that real high-end performance. I remember at Flagstaff, everyone parks their cars up and, you know, it's 40 minutes before we get going on an easy run. And I'm just like, come on, like everyone's doing their band exercises.
If you need to get back for summer and or whatever. And like, to be fair, that is one thing I was fine. Obviously, I'm doing my PhD and I'm pretty busy. Like, and the funny thing I find is that when you're like doing with full-time athletes, and the difference is if you finish your run, the amount of just like milling around because you've got nowhere to be until the second run. Then like, I'm used to like, oh no, I've got to get this done and that done.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't really matter, but it's just quite amusing when you're there and you're like, yeah, you've got time.
This is it. Mate, I think you're going to have every kid on the English school start line hyperventilating before the
I would love that. I was driving Henry McCluckey, like, because we were rooming. Because I was like, mate, I'm doing my breathing exercises. He was like, you old man. And I was like, I don't care, mate.
No. Yeah. Hey, you're quicker than him, so.
Yeah. Look, you mentioned the PhD there, and I think some people who've don't know what it's like doing one camping is quite cushy sometimes. But talk to us about kind of how you juggle some of those commitments with your running.
Yeah, I think it's good because you manage your own time, right? So in that sense it's really good, and I have a very very supportive supervisor who literally loves running, and like it makes it work really well. I guess there is just firstly it's just organization. My time management has to be pretty good, and it's something that I wasn't good 10 years ago at all. Like I was probably like below average, and now I think my time management skills are very good because like time matters and I don't have a lot of it. I think it's just organization, a lot of it. So quite often I will be out of my house these days for like 14, 15 hours because I will get in to work. I'll run from work and then I'll spend the day working, and then I'll do my second run, go to the gym, do my stretching and stuff there, then go and then get home from there, and I'll take my lunch with me, and it's that sort of thing. So it's just organization. I actually quite like it. I find it quite I guess it's the same as most student things. It's with doing, and to be fair, all life as well, but there's periods which are quite intense. So I'm unfortunately now in a bit of an intense period where there's kind of things due in, there's some deadlines and stuff like that. But again, it's just managing that, trying to manage those stress levels. I think, you know, stress can be quite detrimental if you let it get to you to everything, your running performance and everything. So it's just managing that. But yeah, overall, I think it's a pretty good way of kind of combining basically a sport and being able to competing at a top level if like maybe your financial support isn't enough in itself to just be a full-time athlete. And then I guess the other thing is, you know, you're getting qualified, which is quite a nice feeling. You know, once you finish your PhD and you finish your running career, you've got somewhere you can go, which is nice, I think, because I know it's obviously a very hard time when athletes get to that age where they're retiring, and especially maybe all athletes actually, but yeah, you sort of like, oh, I spent all this time and I potentially don't have huge amounts of like financial gain from it, loads of great experiences, but it's like, well, what's now? Like I've got to actually go and move on. And I think, you know, you get a little bit older, you've got to start considering those things. So for me it's working really well. I'm enjoying it. Don't enjoy every single thing, don't enjoy every single day and the stress sometimes, but overall it's all good.
Good man. Right. You're an interesting prospect, obviously sponsored by Hoka. Just as we finish up, what is your shoe rotation? Give us an insight into some of the shoes and especially the spikes, because we don't get to see them much.
Yeah. So, you know what? One thing I actually generally love about Hoka is how much they really want you to see their entire range of shoes. So, I mean, I've been with a couple other brands and they just say, oh, what do you want? And you pick a shoe and you stick with it. Whereas with Hoka, I have pretty much worn every single shoe in their range, and I know their range really well. And I think it's good for both the athlete because you get to experience that, and also good for them because, you can generally talk about what shoes are good. So in terms of easy marlin shoes, so probably the best all-round shoe I think they do is the Mach 5. Literally unbelievable shoe, do everything in it. You could, if I had one shoe that I'd have to do everything in from literally sessioning through to long run, Mach 5, do everything. I often use it as my for before racing, I'll wear it because it makes me feel pretty good. And then in terms of kind of just more clumpy shoes, Clifton, just their workhorse shoe. The Bondi X is a very cool shoe, an underrated shoe. And I do, it's basically a Bondi, which is their maximum cushion shoe. But it has a carbon plate in it. So it's a bit of an unusual shoe. And I think it's kind of fallen, people don't really know about it, but it's a very cool shoe because, basically you just feel really good in it and you don't have to think about it. You put it on, you're tired, double run of the second run of the day, just put it on, take care of yourself. Then definitely the Rocket X2, which is a very good shoe. So that's basically their equivalent of all the road racing shoes, all the big ones, Next Percent, all that stuff. That's brilliant. I think it's a game changer from the Hoka side. I think, I ran quick in Valencia and the shoe definitely helped there. And I think actually it's a shoe now which is comparable, if not better, than anything else in the market, which is cool. And then, spike-wise, they have basically the LD and the MD.
Temple.
I think to the public, the Cielo LD and MD, the first versions are out. The second one, which I think are coming out this year, but I might have got that wrong. I'm going to get beaten up for this. But anyway, that's very good. They basically just increase the stack height. And again, I think it's just very comparable to everything else there out there on the market. I'll be honest, do you know what I mean? When that's the big thing as an athlete, right? You want your spikes to be competitive. I think we're at a point now which you are, and actually some of the directions which they are going in terms of the prototypes and stuff are very cool. Overall, and I've given a massive speech there about Hoka, but I really like the direction they go. And everything I've seen recently has just been good, and I've enjoyed wearing it. So yeah, they're a cool brand to work with, and yeah, enjoy the footwear.
Yeah, awesome, mate. Well, look, Johnny, it's been great to chat to you today, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Appreciate it.
See you Saturday, mate.
Yeah, see you Saturday. See you Highgate.
How far are you due to pace, actually?
5K, yeah.
Okay. Do you know what they're asking for? I guess you're doing that A race, aren't you, that top one?
Yeah, 13:35.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Okay. Swift. They've got some big names in there, obviously. World silver medalists in there. So
yeah, it should be good fun. Be fair, the atmosphere is so good there.
Yeah, you're gonna get carried for a few laps at least. Yeah,
and I think to be fair, I think Joe Wigfield, I think he's taking the first 2 or 3K.
Nice, man. Okay.
Which is helpful because I think 5K on the front at 65s is hard work. Whereas to be fair, if you just sit in for 2-3-8 yourself, and then you just think five laps.
Yeah, good man. All right, mate. Take care. Thanks very much.
Cheers, lads. Cheers, lads. Appreciate it.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.